and I drove from Boston to Rockland, Maine, crossed Penobscot Bay to North Haven, just to see a cigar stub left at the North Haven Inn by a fog-bound celebrity. As we sat on the porch with a breeze blowing in from Fox Island Thoroughfare, Mr. Herman W. Crockett, who managed the North Haven Inn, told us this story. 75 to 80 years ago, he began, this hotel wasn't as big as it is today. Then it was just a private dwelling where Mr. and Mrs. Nelson Mullins took in boarders and let spare rooms to traveling men. We had dog days then, too. And the afternoons in August, the fog rolled in thick. And it was on a foggy and rainy night that all the excitement took place right here on this very veranda. It was such a mean night, Mr. Mullins put out the big kerosene lamp in the living room and turned in early. And he'd barely dozed off when his wife nudged him and said, "Nelson, I hear somebody knocking at the front door." "Must be strangers," he said sleepily, "or they'd know enough to go around back." And as the pounding became more insistent, he jumped out of bed, lighted a candle, put on his trousers and slippers, and went downstairs. He could see by the dripping dining room windows that it was raining hard. And as he opened the front door, a cold, wet wind nearly extinguished his candle. The stranger who stood shivering on the steps before him was short and stocky. He was also soaked to the skin. And as he took a half-smoked cigar from between his bearded lips, he said, "I'm sorry to bother you, but my party got fog-bound out in the bay. Can you give us a bite to eat and put us up for the night?" Mr. Mullins said, "Well, go around to the side door and my wife will let you into the kitchen." He wasn't going to have his brand new rug all tracked up with mud. Well, by this time, Mrs. Mullins was stoking the stove, filling the coffee pot, and wondering if she could piecen out the clam chowder for the unexpected arrivals. The stranger marched into the kitchen, still chewing on the cigar. He removed his coat, gave it a couple of slats, and then draped it on the wood box back of the stove. He went to the sink, pumped himself a drink of water, and as he hung the tin dipper on the nail above the sink, he said, "Nice place you folks got here." And grabbing a straight back chair, he straddled it, so that his back was to the stove and he was facing Mrs. Mullins. Watching him trying to light his rain-soaked cigar, she shoved a pine splinter into the stove and handed the blazing stick to her stern-faced guest, who grunted a gruff, "Thanks," then pulled and puffed to make the wet tobacco burn. And finally, in triumph, he blew clouds of fragrant smoke toward the ceiling. From the front parlor came the babble of men's voices, the thump of suitcases, and then the sound of feet as her husband led the stranded travelers to the upstairs chambers. The stranger never took his eyes off Mrs. Mullins as she sliced some cold boiled potatoes into the frying pan, and his eyes sparkled when she emptied a jar of donuts into a black tin pan and shoved them into the oven. "Good," he said. "I'm very fond of warmed-over donuts." And surreptitiously, he flicked his cigar ashes into a flower pot on the windowsill. And gazing out through the rain-spattered windowpane, he saw lanterns flickering and heard what he thought was a fife and drum. Mrs. Mullins heard the noise, too, and opened the door, exclaiming, "Land of Goshen, it's a parade at this time of night, and they're coming right up the hill. Whatever can it mean?" Well, just then, a tall man in a fisherman's slicker waved his lantern, and as the crowd gathered round him, right here in front of the Mullins house, he climbed up these steps and shouted, "Now, all together, folks, three big cheers for the President of the United States. Hip, hip, hooray!" The man beside Mrs. Mullins grinned like a kid, and struggling into his still wet coat, he said, "Mighty nice of your neighbors to come out in all this rain and serenade me. I guess I better go out and speak to him." And opening the door, the President of the United States, Ulysses S. Grant, stepped onto the porch and held up his hand. The cheers died down and the crowd pressed forward as President Grant thanked them for their welcome. He said, "We got lost in the pea soup fog, and you folks here are the only ones in the United States who knows where the President is." Then he said he was tired and going to bed, but he'd be glad to greet them again in the morning. He returned to the kitchen, where a flustered and flabbergasted Mrs. Mullins was trying to control her emotions. She told her neighbors afterward, "If old man Noah had walked into my kitchen right out of the ark, with all them animals a-traipsing right behind him, I wouldn't have been any more surprised. Imagine it, the President of the United States straddling my kitchen chair and drying his coat on my wood box, and me in that old house dress and slippers, and my hair not done up. Why, I was so pixelated I all but threw them potatoes into the sink and fried the dishcloth. I almost told him to wipe his feet when he came in. Wouldn't that have been awful? But you know, he was real nice, and every day he made himself right to home. He said he liked the way I fried potatoes. And as I live and breathe, he drank five of my donuts and had three cups of black coffee. And he told Nelson, we don't get donuts like these in the White House. Mrs. Nelson paused, took a long breath, and then, thank heaven I didn't say anything when he put that smelly cigar butt in my pot of pink geraniums. I fished it out when he wasn't looking and put it in the cigar box he'd throwed in the kindling basket. I'm going to save it for a souvenir. Maybe someday somebody'll be interested. And somebody was. 73 years later, the Blackingtons were interested and made a special trip to North Haven to see and handle that well-chewed cigar. But when I asked Mr. Crockett what President Grant was doing in Penobscot Bay, he shook his head. All I know, he said, is that he was on the revenue cutter on the way to Bar Harbor. The fog was awful thick, so they put in here and stayed all night. Well, I said, who was with him? Any prominent people? Oh, sure. He had his whole cabinet and a lot of other politicians. Here, look at the book they signed their names in. And Mr. Crockett handed me a small, yellowish-brown day book. And in Mr. Mullin's handwriting, I read the date. North Haven, Maine, August the 15th, 1873. And then followed the flourishing signatures of U.S. Grant President, ex-Vice President Honorable Hannibal Hamlin, James G. Blaine, he was Speaker of the House then, later became Secretary of State. Then we read the names of Congressmen Hale and Washburn, Senators Cameron and Merrill, and Honorable Thomas B. Reed. The captain of the revenue cutter, Commodore Thomas Lay, also signed the book, as did Governor Parham of Maine. And all told, there were 26 in that party, all connected with the United States government or the state of Maine, both of which were then strongly Republican. Seems they'd started for Bar Harbor on the revenue cutter McCulloch, but the fog was so thick they put into North Haven. And while the gentlemen came ashore, the ladies in the party remained on board the cutter. And thus they missed the wonderful meal Mrs. Mullins whipped up once she found out she was entertaining the president. They had pretty good grub at the Blaine House in Augusta, but Mother Mullins gave them the works. She made hot buttermilk biscuits and served her best plum preserve. And she sent out for lobsters, and they had steamed clams, plenty of excellent coffee, and the warmed over donuts. Unlike a presidential junket of today, there were no secret servicemen, no newsreels or photographers, and only one lone reporter. His exclusive story was headed Fun in the Fog, and it dealt principally with the evening meal and the fact that President Grant held an impromptu reception the next morning so the islanders could come up and shake hands. One boy didn't dare go because he had paint stains on the front of his shirt, but a pal grabbed some chalk and covered up the stains, and the kids went and met the president and talked about shaking his hand for the rest of their lives. I wonder if any of the babies he kissed are living today. The dramatic visit of the fog-bound presidential party made the Mullins House famous overnight, and it certainly boosted Mr. Mullins up the ladder of success. He was appointed postmaster, then collector of the port for the District of Belfast. Then he ran for the legislature and won hands down, and, as he said, all because the president got lost in the fog and stayed here overnight. Now I must tell you about the other cigar which Mr. Crockett showed us. During World War II, Thomas W. Lamont came back from Europe on the giant steamship Queen Mary, securing at the last moment one of the most palatial suites. He was hunting through his stateroom desk for a blotter, and he came across the biggest and blackest cigar he'd ever seen. He showed it to the purser and said, who occupied that suite before I came aboard? The purser smiled and answered, why, the Honorable Winston Churchill. I see you found one of his cigars. Why, I must have, said Mr. Lamont. And when we arrive safely in New York Harbor, I'm going to celebrate by smoking Mr. Churchill's cigar. But just as they passed the Statue of Liberty, Thomas W. Lamont happened to remember Innkeeper Crockett down at North Haven, Maine, and suspecting that he might like to have that cigar to go with the one General Grant had left, he saved it. And a few weeks later, when his yacht put into North Haven, he called on Herman Crockett and gave him the cigar. And that isn't all of the story. You may recall that President Franklin D. Roosevelt liked nothing better than to cruise around Penobscot Bay. And one day, he found himself completely fog-bound at Pulpit Harbor. Mr. Herman Crockett, hearing about this on the radio, said, I'll bet FDI would like to see my famous cigars. Guess I'll go over to Pulpit Harbor and call on him. And if he's in a good humor, I'm going to ask him for one of his cigarettes to go with my souvenirs. But before Herman Crockett's motor launch was in sight of the Amberjack, he was overhauled by the Coast Guard, the Secret Service, and the FBI. But he told those ever-alert guardians, I only want to show something interesting to President Roosevelt. Well, naturally, the Secret Service men wanted to know what he had to show the president. So, waving the cigar box, wrapped in brown paper, Herman Crockett hollered through a megaphone, All I've got here is just a couple of old cigars. Somebody said, That guy must be nuts. Why, he might have a bomb in that box. Close in on him. But Herman insisted, and finally the Coast Guard agreed to take a note to the presidential yacht. And a few minutes later, the answer was wigged away for him to come alongside the Amberjack. The late Steve Early looked at the cigars, grinned, and said, Okay, Mr. Crockett, I think the boss will be interested in seeing what you've got here. Come on below. While having breakfast in his bunk, he was cordial and laughing, and after hearing the story, he examined the cigars with his magnifying glass. Then he opened the little book bearing the names of President Grant's party. Great heavens, Steve, he said to Secretary Early, will you look at these priceless autographs? U.S. Grant, Hannibal Hamlin, Thomas B. Reed, and Mr. Roosevelt read off all the other names. And then FDR picked up his fountain pen, and turning the page, he added his signature, saying, That's a wonderful story, Mr. Crockett. I'd like to see your place sometime. Well, Herman said, come over anytime. We'll give you a first-class down-east shore dinner. They shook hands, and Franklin Delano Roosevelt's parting words were, And if you're ever in Washington, Mr. Crockett, look us up in the White House. Herman Crockett couldn't wait to get back to North Haven to tell his family and how he'd been entertained on the presidential yacht and how informal and friendly Mr. Roosevelt had been. But when someone said, Well, where are the cigarettes he gave you? Herman gulped and stammered, Why, I was so gosh darned excited, I plumb forgot to ask him for one. Before we left North Haven, Mr. Crockett told us of other distinguished guests who have stayed at the inn. The Lamonts, the McAdoos, the Dwight Morrows, and the Lindberghs. And, of course, Mayor Andrew J. Peters and Senator Saltonstall. And a great many artists and authors. When Mr. Crockett passed away, the famous cigars were given to his nephew, Mr. Richard Crockett, who wrote me a few days ago that he still has them among his most treasured possessions. And on the wall of the North Haven Inn, you can see today a framed, fading newspaper clipping dated August the 15th, 1873, giving a brief account of President Grant's getting fogbound in Penobscot Bay. That happened almost 75 years ago, but I think this is the first time the story has ever been told on the air.